Hello, I'm Mary Cordova with Concierge Care Advisors. I am the co-founder. We help seniors stay in their home safely or make a transition to assisted living or memory care. And today I am talking to Dr. Ferris and Dr. DeMorais about the recognition and prevention of memory loss. Welcome, doctors.
Thank you.
Why don't you guys ahead and introduce yourself for the people that haven't been to one of our podcasts?
Dr. Ferris.
I'm Dr. Brian Ferris. I am a general surgeon and vascular surgeon, trained in both, and have been in the Seattle metropolitan area for over the last 20 years.
Welcome. Thank you.
And I'm Dr. Alex DeMorais. I'm a family practice physician. I'm a hospice medical director, and I take care of patients in a number of nursing homes.
Well, again, welcome. And I can't think of two better people to talk about memory loss when it comes to vascular. And also doctor being a family practice and hospice and all of that and dealing with aging seniors. You probably see this quite often. I would just like to share a little bit on how we see it on the housing piece and then share how you guys see it on the medical side, if that works both well for both of you. So on my side, on what causes some issues with memory loss, dementia, is whether someone is combative or exit seeking. So those two things are really difficult for us to see if it's just behavior from the hospital. Are they confused because they're not with their wife they've been with for 55 years? They're in a new setting, they had an accident, maybe they fell, they ended up in the emergency room for 6 hours, now they're on the floor. So a lot of confusion. And so we have to figure out, are they being resistant to care because they're scared? It's not my wife taking care of me. And you know, what does that resistance look like? And we also see that a lot of people that come from their own home, they are not on any medications for behaviors and from their own environment. So that's kind of our first question is, are they taking any medications, psychotropics, anything at night to help them sleep? And what does that look like? So obviously our number one concern is that someone, a senior, is safe with other seniors, that there's not gonna be a risk to an 85-year-old little lady that we're looking at putting perhaps a gentleman that was a police officer at one time and is now having some combative behaviors. As you know, from dealing with hospitals, sometimes they don't really care about all that. They just wanna get them out of the hospital. And my number one concern is not only for senior patient safety, but also for anyone else that we're gonna have them be living with. So we really take that seriously on the combativeness and resistant to care. Resistant to care, we can deal with that. But combativeness, you know, hitting somebody with your cane, your walker, a little bit of verbal abuse, of caregivers are used to that. We can handle that. But again, when they're unsafe or others are unsafe around them, that's when we really have to look at, you know, what does that look like? And sometimes it is, can they go to a behavioral hospital? Can they go to a psychiatric ward where the doctor can take them off of all of their medication and then regain what that really looks like? Maybe it's a 21-day stay. But the problem with that is if they have any acts of daily living, a lot of times we can't get them into the psych ward if they have ADLs needs. So it really is something that we become very challenged with. As we know, 40% of seniors will end up with some type of cognitive decline. So on our side, we see a lot of people either in memory cares with memory loss or adult family homes. I think there's a misconception that everyone that has memory loss has to be in a memory care or a nursing home. And as we know, that isn't the case. Sometimes people just need reminders. They need to remember to cueing, those kind of things to help them navigate throughout the day. Doesn't mean that they can't function. They still have activities. They love music, those kind of things. And we want to bring out those kind of activities in them so they can enjoy life and not stress and be anxious about things that they can't control. So that's kind of my side. I would love to hear a little bit about your journey and what you guys see with dementia and memory loss.
Well, Mary, I think that was one of the most comprehensive and eloquent summaries of a huge problem. And I think that you touched on the fact that roughly no matter what someone faces as they age, or what we would see from a concierge perspective, care advisor perspective, mm-hmm. or from a surgeon, primary care, family practice, and any sort of medical directorship for assisted living all the way to hospice, is roughly half of them are going to have cognitive problems, whether that's how cognitive in terms of higher function processing or memory or both. Mm-hmm. So no matter what the health problem is, and when you really look at the top 10 reasons for why we're only here for a certain period of time, why we are mortal, but it's roughly cardiovascular diseases, mm-hmm. so heart, stroke, so it's not cognitive, but stroke, so paralyzed.
Your specialty, yep.
And peripheral arterial disease, limb loss, kidney failure, dialysis, and then cancer, followed by some of the other common problems, infection, trauma, so on and so forth. Cognitive problems are going to pervade all of that. And it's a huge challenge that we all need to be better at. And I don't think a week goes by that we're learning more because of the gravity of the problem. Mm-hmm. And we can start to talk about the problem not only better from an assessment, but then not only what do we do about it now. And you may have described some of the best, in my opinion, some of the best influences, which are environmental. I've spent a good part of my career inpatient begging nurses to either sit with that person or let their family sit with them, mm-hmm. because I still haven't found the medicine that works that great in the hospital, mm-hmm. or creates its own problems or ones that they come in with. And it's a dynamic problem that changes with that illness, changes with that environment. It's really clear. So I think you summarized it very well of what may put them in a better place, but that I can't reflect enough how enormous the problem is going to be as it is now.
It's huge. It's memory loss is really a challenge for us all, because, you know, we can look at blood vessels through looking through people's eyes. We can gauge vascular disease sometimes by looking at people's legs. We can do arterial studies, but we can't look into your brain without doing an MRI to see if you're, number one, beginning to show signs of changes. Mm-hmm. And that makes it really challenging for us, because it's a grayscale, right? We don't just one day wake up with, like, you can wake up with an infection, or you can wake up with something else, but you can wake up with a heart attack, but typically you don't wake up with memory loss. It's just a slow progressive decline, and no one wants to hear the word dementia, because it comes with this whole cognitive
scare.
It's a cognitive scare, it's mm-hmm. a financial scare, mm-hmm. it's a change in our independence. Mm-hmm. It's now the psychosocial support needed.
Loss of the car keys.
How are you going to take those away? Yeah.
Yes, those are the big ones, because no one wants to lose their driving privileges. Mm-hmm. But it's a reality that we need to talk about and discuss. And for me, I try to look way downstream on how I can prevent cerebral vascular disease, because many times the other vascular issues, we're pretty good at taking care of it in advance, but the brain issues we're really not, because maybe it's because we don't see it. Mm-hmm. But what can we do starting at the age of 30 or 40 or 50 in looking at the whole person, including their genetics? And by genetics, I don't mean a genetic test. I mean just talking to them about their personal and family history, mm-hmm. looking at their health issues, looking at their family's health issues, looking at some metrics, some medical metrics, whether it be through imaging studies or through lab testing, and saying you're now predisposed to this risk, because we're living longer.
Right.
Right. And with living longer comes aging, and with aging comes wear and tear, mm-hmm. and that wear and tear occurs everywhere, including our brains. Mm-hmm. Many times we look at somebody and we say, oh, you're healthy, you don't have to worry about it. But I would say that a majority of people that in hospice who come to hospice for dementia are more women than men. It really is more women than men.
Well, men are hard on us, I guess. Women outlive men, though, right?
They do.
Is that still a statistic?
So I'm going to turn this over to Brian, because if anyone's going to get in trouble, it should be him, not me.
So, Dr. Ferris, we're putting you on the spot.
Well, I think Alex is right. I think what we've learned is that by understanding the influences that start earlier, we can change the onset of the disease or the decline, maybe even prevent it. And I don't think a week goes by where we talk about the paramount importance of those lifestyles. Maybe we can talk about that in another podcast, but it makes a huge difference. And unfortunately, once it becomes profound, the options we have in our medical toolkit really aren't great.
Right.
And they may not change for a while. And so we still have a huge number of people that are at the point of needing somewhere to go,
mm-hmm.
that you face. And again, I think you did a good job of outlining what works, sometimes medicine, sometimes not, sometimes environment, sometimes not, and how do you change with the situation. And there's no doubt we have to get better,
yes.
at that, so that bad things don't happen, whether it's self-harm or any other kind of harm.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a moving target, and we'll have to get really good at knowing how to talk about it, first of all, at a preventative level. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of things that we have to socially come to terms with on an individual basis. But once it starts to happen, and once it's finally recognized, because there is great testing. It's probably easier and cheaper to get an MRI, but really,
a MoCA, right?
You get a MoCA, or when you really want to go into it, it's a deep dive into the weeds on testing. And sadly, as we were talking about before the recording, is by the time you can get that appointment, months or longer have gone by. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you get the results, the whole process has advanced and there's not much you can do about
right.
it. And so for me, and I think Alex and I both, is why do the test if it's not going to change your management,
mm-hmm.
right? You take a good history, you get a good exam, or, you know, in this case, look at the person, and then you can start having a conversation from a medical standpoint about the decision making and what to do. And a lot of it, as we've said, becomes social and situational, and to have what they might need condensed into a service like concierge care advisors is incredibly valuable. Because that's where a lot of the problems can be avoided,
mm-hmm.
and we can do the best we can until everything else starts to catch up.
And I think a lot of families do not know that their parents are struggling with memory loss or dementia. What I call it is pleasantly confused. And if their family members are pleasantly confused, it probably has been going on for some time. And adult seniors hide it from their kids because they want to drive. They want that independence. So they're really not transparent on coming out and saying, yeah, you know what? I got lost yesterday. The kids are the last to know. Usually it's the bank or, you know, the teller or the McDonald's that says, I'm in Everett. And I should clarify, even though we're in Seattle and MoCA, we probably went to coffee, is a medical cognitive test. I just wanted
right.
to say
we got
that.
Called by the county sheriff because a grandparent had been driving around in a traffic circle for 3 hours.
Oh,
so
geez.
So nobody got hurt, but again,
just in a circle,
just going around
occupied.
In a traffic circle. She was happy.
Little social stimulation.
Did fine. Spent the evening down at the sheriff's.
Oh,
but,
no.
But again, everybody was surprised.
Right.
And so I think what I've observed is that an early sign tends to be that elder's world starts getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then mm-hmm. you have to start asking the questions, whether that's at a medical level or a family level. I think it's really becomes the same question from our perspective. What are you doing? And if they're not active and they're not doing anything, that's really a clue.
Sure.
Yeah, and what we don't see is the conversation is, mom still remembers all of her friends.
Right.
Well,
right.
People don't lose that long-term memory. It's right. the short-term
it's
memory.
It's short-term, yeah.
Also, what we see, too, sometimes is a change in gait and how they walk.
Yes.
You know, they can't get up out of the chair as fast as they used mm-hmm. to. They may be hesitant to start walking. And, mm-hmm. and those are all little tiny signs that if we bring it up to the surface and have a conversation early, there are times we can improve the outcomes and give somebody a better quality of life for a longer period of time. Sometimes you just have to be ready to put support in place for them to live the best life they can.
Well, I think that touches on the...
Because we can't stop it. Sorry to interrupt. We can't stop it, right?
No, but
we can help prevent some of the issues that might come from it.
Well, you just said it, and Alex just touched on it, is that the social engagement will not only be an opportunity to become aware, but it's actually also good medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that social engagement is associated with less cognitive decline. And if that happens for that individual, then maybe that's the opportunity for their loved ones, whether it's the spouse, the family, or whatnot, to become more aware.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, then you have the next hurdle, which is the comfort level to talk about it. And those are ongoing challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and all the dementias, they really lead to the same outcomes, unfortunately.
Right.
Unfortunately.
So whether you have Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia or Parkinson's disease or...
It's kind of all the same, right?
Alcoholic-related
right.
dementia,
mm-hmm.
they all really lead down to the same path of care. At the end, we need assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could have intervened before that, and there's a number of ways to intervene, obviously, socialization. I think we're going to touch on exercise a little bit later. That's really important.
Management of anxiety and depression,
mm-hmm,
the stressors
mm-hmm,
of
stress.
Life, those are all the things. And it's very interesting in my practice. I call on my old dudes and my old gals, all of them exercise.
Nice.
Some form of exercise. And it's a game changer. And especially
mm-hmm.
if they socialize,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of weightlifting.
That social stimulation and activity.
You can't neglect the family history,
mm-hmm.
and you can't neglect the things that really plug the pipes,
yeah.
right?
Sure.
Because if the pipes, you can have the best of surroundings, but the worst of genes,
right?
And it's really tough to mitigate and adjust that outcome. You
mm-hmm.
can improve it a little bit, but if what I'm finding is that we're really late to the game in prevention across the board. We really, really are.
Well, I don't think. I'm sorry to jump in, but I don't think, unfortunately, we're throughout the course of my career where, again, going into medical school, a big push in terms of primary care and family practice, we had a fantastic program at University of Virginia for family practice. I don't think we've kept up the momentum that we should have, and we're really playing catch up, and we're being more reactive than proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a growing appetite that may be in the pre-medical space, say, well, how do I take care of myself? And I mean, I've clearly observed as a vascular surgeon taking care of a spectrum of diseases between arterial and venous disease, and therefore a broad age spectrum, is who's crushing it. And you described exactly who's doing well versus who doesn't. But that also shows the impact of those choices. And the good news is, and I think we'll again touch on it in another podcast, is even a little bit of that makes a big difference, makes a measurable difference, and will make everybody's jobs easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for me, I always tell people, it doesn't matter which path you choose, you
just
can go the
path.
Traditional medical path, you can go the non-traditional medical path, you can choose to do your own self-care, just surround yourself with those people who, number one, have the knowledge and are successful and can hopefully intervene in a way that you'll do better, and you'll have less memory issues, less cardiovascular issues, and ultimately a better quality of life. So
wonderful. We also see that people sometimes go to memory care communities, or we show them a memory care community and quickly find out that they're overstimulated. And I think that's something that we really don't focus in on. We think, oh, we just want to get them in an active community and make sure that things are going on. For some people, that's too much. That, you know, the dancers that are coming in, or the music that's up loud, or, you know, just constant activity. Sometimes a smaller environment with five other people is exactly perfect for someone coming from their own home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in with 60 other people is just a little bit much, with all different levels of dementia or memory loss, or, like I said, sure, pleasantly confused. Also, one thing I just want to quickly touch on is when people call and say, gosh, my mom was fine yesterday and she woke up with Alzheimer's. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way. And I can attest to that. My mom during COVID was driving and she parked in front of her house, very crooked to the curb, with her door open, left her purse on the seat, and knocked on the neighbor's door and said, I don't know where I live. And it was definitely a raging UTI that presented as memory loss. And right, she needed a blood transfusion, went to the hospital, and a year and a half later, we have not had one problem with her cognition. Right. So I think for people need to know that.
Well, there's an acute change, or what we would maybe call delirium.
Yes, yes.
Versus a more chronic cognitive decline, which are all the different dementias. And when you're acutely ill, that, and especially as you get older, that may be the very first sign of infection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does require a good looking over to make sure that there isn't something. And you're going to help a certain number of people. I wish we helped a lot more.
Yeah. Can you talk about the delirium that comes at the hospital level?
Oh, I think that's huge. I think we could spend a whole podcast mm-hmm. on it. I mean, just being out of their environment and routine,
right,
can be a cause of delirium.
Right.
And then you add illness, and then you add intervention, in my case, surgery, and everything that comes with it, medications for comfort, so on and so forth. So when I have the opportunity on an elective basis, I spend a lot of time with expectation management in terms of what is going to happen postoperatively, what they're going to feel, because I like to try. I've found that after 2+ decades in practice, plus fellowship, plus a long residency, I've used all the medicines that have come and gone, and new medicines and old medicines that have come back again. And there is no magic.
Yeah.
And what I found is that less is more.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And that expectation management has been the best to minimize the delirium. And then family involvement.
Family involvement, keeping them engaged. How many times, doctor, do you hear, oh, they sleep all day. They sleep all day and they won't sleep at night. Well, if you keep them engaged and active during the day, they'll probably get better sleep at night, right?
And that's a self-preservation thing, too, when people start having dementia.
Mm-hmm.
We see a trend toward longer sleep times.
Yeah.
And some of that is, you know, the boredom that comes with
mm-hmm.
being isolated and lonely. Mm-hmm. So the brain is a pretty amazing organ, and it knows how to handle itself in situations like that for many instances. So people do sleep more.
Yeah.
They become less engaged. They typically sometimes become either, they can become angry, or they can become very quiet and passive. So it varies with everybody. So, but, you know, I think the keys are earlier intervention, change in behavior, improve our physical activity, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit, and then mitigating some of those psychosocial risks that we have.
Perfect. Thank you, doctors, again, for coming to the Concierge Care Advisors podcast.
Thank you.